foundations of biotechnology. So we looked at one of the big, or several of the big processes, looking at the maybe insulin as our example here. So now I'm going to look at some more applications. The biggie that we already really talked about is making medicines through biotechnology. We looked at making insulin using recombinant DNA in bacteria. You can also use human growth hormone. As I mentioned, you can make vaccines. You can also make erythropoietin. This is the EPO. It's commonly called EPO. Okay? And that is what blood doping is all about. Okay, so, like I mentioned earlier, our body makes EPO because occasionally your body gets low on red blood cells, right? So it sends out this message to your body that says, hey, we need more red blood cells. EPO is the messenger. Okay, now, if you're an athlete, why would you maybe find it beneficial to give yourself an extra dose of EPO?
Carry more oxygen.
Okay. How is that going to help you out as an athlete?
Endurance.
Okay. So, if you have more red blood cells, that means you can carry more oxygen. That means you have more oxygen to your muscles for a long period of time. That can give you an advantage that's not considered natural, I guess. It's a drug that you're using to give yourself an advantage.
Don't they kind of do that through like hyperbaric chambers?
Yes. Yes, and that's forcing more oxygen in there, forcing the maximum amount of oxygen into your body. Is that one considered illegal?
I don't know. It's legal.
That one's legal? Okay.
That's legal, but it's like the treatment
for
injury. Like, I put my ACL when I had to get my hyperbaric chamber, and that's what happened.
Really?
Yeah.
And it helped?
Yeah, it helped. It learned in 3 months.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I
didn't know that. Wow, that's pretty cool. So it's used advantageously, and I didn't know that. Thank you for sharing. Okay, so that's blood doping, EPO, that sort of thing. Okay. All right, so other applications. This one here is about curing diseases with biotechnology. This particular child here has SCID, which is an immunodeficiency disease. Okay, and this was back probably 20 years ago. 20 years ago, the 1990s. This is when you go into a body and correct a malfunctioning gene. Okay. Let's say that you have cystic fibrosis. This affects your lungs. Okay? It affects other things in your body too, but the main place in your body where you have a huge problem is in your lungs. Okay? So the idea in gene therapy is that you would fix the DNA in the cells of the lungs so that they then function correctly. Okay. Once you are a baby or a child, you already have DNA in all of your cells and all of your body that's exactly the same. Can you change the DNA in all of your cells of all of your body? Not really. Okay? That's a very difficult thing to do, number one. So the idea in gene therapy is to fix the DNA in the areas that's causing the problem. Okay? In the immunodeficiency disease, fix the bone marrow, fix the bone cells, the marrow cells, so that they will function correctly. In cystic fibrosis, fix the cells in the lungs so that they will function correctly. Okay. Major problems with this.
Can that be like the same as like the organ transplant problem?
Sort of, except that instead of adding cells that aren't yours, you're going in there and changing your own cells, okay? But that is one of the problems that they kind of run into, all right? But the biggest problem is, how do you do that, okay? You can't, because the idea here is, you don't take the lungs out, fix them, and put them back in. They need the consistent. Okay? This particular child in this picture, they thought that they had cured him. Come to find out they had not, and they have not been able to replicate this particular success in further cases. So gene therapy is something that is in possibility stage. It's not really something that is functioning in our technology right now. Okay, Taylor was first, and then we'll get you, Justin.
When you put different genes inside of someone, like, higher thing that they were trying to do here, it doesn't cause like your body to fight itself?
That's what Ian was saying. If you change the cell, will your body still recognize them as your cells?
Yeah.
And that is one of the problems that they've had is, all right, if you do change the cells, how do you change all of the cells that need to be changed, and how do you keep the body from treating it as a different cell? Yes. So there's been a lot of problems on a lot of different levels with this particular method. Justin? The disease is not contagious, it's an immunodeficiency disease. So in other words, they're not trying to protect you from him, they're trying to protect him from you and all the germs you carry, right? So if you are in a protected bubble, then you can purify that air, you can purify anything that comes in contact with you, you have control over that environment.
So it lets you contact you again?
Yes. If someone has an immunodeficiency disease, it's not producing an immune system, essentially, bottom line. So it doesn't have anything in their body to fight off bacteria, viruses, and things like that. So they're trying to protect that person from germs. Okay.
I was just going to say, so pretty much just like that, we'll lead off a little boy.
Yes. Yes. Go ahead.
Then why can organ transplants be so successful if you find the right match? If they're completely different sets of genetic
code? First off, you want to match it as much as possible. So if it's a completely different cell protein identifiers, it usually will be rejected. You want at least to partially match, not completely match. You can give anti-rejection medicines to keep your body from fighting against it. It essentially lowers your immune system, however, for the rest of your life, but it keeps your body from attacking the immune organ.
Alright. You know how they do like blood transfusions and stuff like that?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of similar to this question. If like how do we have the same type of blood, but yet it's not the same? You understand the microphone?
That's actually a really good question. Okay, so Reader's Digest version, but I don't want to spend more time on this before we finish one. Reader's Digest version. All right. On your cells of your organs, you have four or five, sometimes up to six, different types of protein identifiers that your body recognizes as yours, okay? There's only a limited number, which means you could have four that are the same as CJ. All right, so CJ maybe could give you a kidney. Okay. Now, in blood typing, there's only really type O, type B, type A, type AB across all of us.
Which one of those works for all of them?
O negative. So really, there's O positive, O negative, A positive, A negative, B positive, B negative, AB positive, AB negative. But that's it. All right. So if you have the same blood type as someone else, then the blood, just blood, not your cells, on your tissues, but just the blood, is exactly the same. So if you are AB positive and CJ is AB positive, blood can head over, no problem.
I'm O negative.
Yes, the O negative was still good. I'm O negative as well. Don't the blood banks love you?
Yes.
They call you constantly? Yeah. Uh-huh. Anybody else O negative in here? If you've ever given blood and you're O negative,
never
forget it. The blood banks will harass you. Okay, Justin, you had a question? It depends on what's causing it. In this particular example, it's a disease. Yeah.
Take vitamin C and antioxidant.
In theory. Some people say yes. We looked at the beginning of which
after we looked at the study that would do that, and so that's questionable, but some people swear by that one. So there's some things that you can do to increase your immune system. Getting sleep, eating well, giving your body what it needs is one of the best things you can do to help your immune system.
They don't sleep that well, they don't eat that much, they don't really care about the immune system.
That's why. There are things that you can do to help your body sleep better.
Can I ask one more question?
Quickly, yes.
What is the correlation between chewing ice when you're anemic and it helping you produce more red blood cells?
No clue.
They always say chew on ice when you have anemia.
I don't know.
It's true that you said it.
I have no idea. I'll have to ask on that one. I have no idea. I don't know. Okay, so we talked about these are gene therapy difficulties. Difficulty getting the working gene into the cells where it's needed. Okay? Getting it into enough cells to actually have an effect. So if you're trying to change the cells in the lungs, you have to get it into enough of the cells of the lungs to actually have an effect. Okay? And problems with the transfer organism getting into unintended cells. So say you use a virus to transfer the good DNA. Well, how do you know the virus isn't going to go somewhere where you don't want it to go? Once you put a virus into the body, you only have so much control. All right? There's been a lot of difficulties with this and very limited success. Okay. So, another application of biotechnology. This is our third one here. Preventing disease with biotechnology. Another one here. You can intervene at three different points. Okay? First one, is a given set of parents likely to produce a baby with a genetic disease? Okay. For example, are you a carrier of cystic fibrosis? Cystic fibrosis is a genetic disease. It's recessive. So you can have one gene that's good, one recessive gene for cystic fibrosis. You don't have the disease, but if you marry someone or have a kid with someone that also has a recessive, you could end up with a child that has cystic fibrosis. We'll talk more about that in the inheritance chapter. Okay? If you could also be a carrier for things like sickle cell anemia, Tay-Sachs disease. There's a lot of genetic diseases that you can have as a carrier and not have the disease. You could have it your whole life. So you can get tested. If these things run in your family, you can get tested to see if you are a carrier. You can use this information to decide how you want to handle having children. Do you want to have children? Do you want to adopt? Do you want to make sure that your husband or wife or child partner, whatever the case may be, always forget, that's not always the way it goes now. Your child partner doesn't have the recessive gene as well, so you will for sure not have a child that has that disease. You know, you can use this information, decide how you want to handle it. Yeah.
So biotechnology, is that the same thing as whenever you are pregnant and they can test whether the baby has Down syndrome?
Yes. And that's one of our next steps. Very good segue. Nice. Okay. So, as you just said. All right. Will a baby be born with a genetic disease? So let's say that these things do run in your family, right? You decide to have a child, and you want to find out if your child that you're carrying has any of these genetic diseases, okay? Now, this can be used in a lot of different ways. Alright, first off, you can use it to know what you're heading into to prepare. Let's say that you're going to have a child that has cystic fibrosis. There's a lot of medical needs that go along with that. Or a child that has Down syndrome. You can go ahead and start looking at schools, make preparations, learning centers, all these preparations that you need to know. So this is knowledge to know what you're heading into. Okay? Now,
they always write?
Yes. Okay. So these, they take and do the genetic
test, and it would test to see if that is looking at the genome of the child to see if it has certain genes. So yes, they do that. Now, I will admit that also sometimes, for example, if you're an older mother, they often do amniocentesis to check for a lot of these things, in particular Down syndrome. And sometimes this information is used to decide whether you want to keep the child or not. Okay?
They only tell you chances, though, like 1 in 1,000 that you have a baby. They can't tell you, like, exactly, can they?
Yeah,
when they test
your
child.
Yeah. Now,
it's inside of you.
Yes. Now, if they're testing, in the first one that we looked at, if they're testing the parents, so if you're testing me and the person I'm going to have a child with, they can tell you, okay, you have a 1 in 4 chance that you're going to have a child with cystic fibrosis.
Right.
Or you're a carrier, but the guy is not, so there's no way you're going to have a child with cystic fibrosis. So they can give you those chances. But once the child is inside of you, they take fluid that contains, the amniotic fluid contains the same DNA as the child.
But they have to do the amniocentesis to find out.
Right. Okay. They essentially take the fluid, they do the test on it, and they're doing a DNA workup. Just like if they took your blood or your hair or your cheek cells, they would be doing a DNA test on you to see, do you have blah, 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 right? They're doing the same thing for the baby. They're just pulling it from inside of you. But they're testing to see, and they're doing the same DNA test. So they know at that point. And they can tell you your child is fine according to these particular diseases that we tested for, or your child has Down syndrome, or your child has cystic fibrosis. They can tell you at that point. Okay? Now, the third one here. Is an individual likely to develop a genetic disease later in life? And this may be what you're thinking of, actually, now that we get to the third one. This may be where you're headed. Okay. So there are certain things that you may have a marker for, such as they have found that there is a particular gene that's associated with being more likely to become an alcoholic. But you can go your entire life and never be an alcoholic. You don't drink, you'll never be an alcoholic. Right? There are certain genes that make you more likely to get breast cancer. Right? But that doesn't guarantee that you're going to get breast cancer. There are also certain genes that make you more likely to get multiple sclerosis, some depressions, yes, but where you're later in life.
Alzheimer's.
Thank you. Sorry, I knew it was an A and it comes to me.
Setting in already.
What?
Setting in already.
There you go. Exactly. All right. So this is where you would say, okay, you have a greater chance than other people to be able to get this later in life. Okay? So this third one is probably one of the most controversial ones, okay? Because there's some ethical dilemmas associated with this one. Okay, let's say that you go to your doctor and you say, okay, I want a genetic workup. I want to know what markers I have for breast cancer, Alzheimer's, give me the works. Okay. Where does the information go?
Oh, that's right.
Is it going to stay just with you and your doctor?
No, your
You know the little form that you sign every time you go into your doctor's office? You may have read it.
It's confidential.
Quite the opposite. It gives your doctor's office permission to share anything with your insurance company if it has to do with your care. Okay? So, it's making it confidential. It is a privacy statement, but you're also, if you read those forms, it's giving your doctor's office permission to share needed information with your insurance company. Okay, so does this fall under that category? Where will the information go? Where will it end up? Right? Just for example, your health insurance. What if they found out that you have the marker for breast cancer? What are they going to do?
Drop you.
Well, they can't anymore. According to the new healthcare bill.
Yeah, hopefully not. But as of right now, by their job.
Okay, so these are things that we have to think about as we head into this. Do you want to do this kind of stuff, and how should we protect this information? So it's very good technology, but it can be abused in the wrong hands. So as we head into this, you have to think about how to handle this.
Yeah, with testing of babies, is that something you have to get done?
No.
Okay.
No.
It is difficult.
But yes, it is pretty typical, and there are, let's say...
Isn't it painful, though? Or,
yes.
I'm told it's pretty painful.
Yes.
I thought they didn't do amniocentesis anymore. Like, certain doctors won't do them unless, like, you have, like, a really high risk.
Yeah. If you are a high-risk pregnancy, that's what I was about to say. If you're a high-risk pregnancy, say you've had multiple miscarriages before,
right.
Or if you are over 40, that sort of thing, oftentimes they will suggest that you go ahead and have amniocentesis to make sure that everything's okay. In most cases, they do not unless they suspect that there is a problem. When the baby is born, there's also a range of tests that they do depending on your descent. Like if you're from Jewish descent, oftentimes they'll automatically test for KSATs, which is a Jewish descent disease. In some states and in some hospitals, they're now starting to check for things like, believe it or not, AIDS, things like that. That's kind of a routine thing. There's like a routine set of tests they do when they report. Along with, you know, AIDS is not a genetic test, but it kind of falls in.
Go ahead.
So there's certain things they test for when the baby pops out.
What about that for marriage licenses when they used to do that? I think first time I got married, I had
to. You know, they used to do that. In most states, that's not required anymore. But many people still do it. And kind of like the baby that I mentioned earlier, the AIDS testing is being added to that array. So like sexually transmitted diseases is being added to that array of things that people check and make sure before they marry.
They're also doing DNA tests to make sure you're not marrying your cousin.
Yes, that's I think part of where it came from originally. I don't know how it started out, but now it's kind of evolved to check for things like, are you a carrier for cystic fibrosis? Are you a carrier for sickle cell? Do you have AIDS? You know, that array is kind of where it's evolved into. But it's not required by most states
now.
I think there's still a couple out there that require it, but most, no. Yeah.
I have a question. You know when this biotechnology stuff we're talking about? The five steps. Do you think it would be possible, like, in the future, or, like, say if you find out with the little test that they run on, like, pregnant women that your baby is going to have, like, Down syndrome, do you think that is possible for them to biotechnology, reverse it while the baby is born?
That is actually, that one was kind of somewhere in the middle of there. I didn't mention that one. If you're going to change the DNA of a child, okay, when do you need to do it? When?
Before they develop.
How soon before they develop?
Like,
if you want to change every single piece of DNA in that child, when do you have to change the DNA?
Before you have a child, yeah.
Okay, I heard before conception, and I heard at conception, okay? When you are sperm, egg, come together, you are then one cell. And that one cell, and that DNA in that one cell is going to divide into the two, into the four, and so on and so forth, that makes the DNA for every piece of you. So if you want to change the DNA, when do you have to change it? Very first cell.
That's romantic.
Oh, yeah, right? But, you know, in vitro fertilizations, and there are actually companies now that you can pre-order a child. I want blue eyes, blonde hair.
6 feet tall.
That's legal.
Yes.
When you go
as of right now. This is why I like doing this chapter, because a lot of this you don't realize is going on out there. And you're going to be making the decisions of how this is regulated from here on out.
Like, the more you try to control that, doesn't it give, like, a higher chance of, like, having issues and problems?
That's what you guys are going to have to figure out. Our generation. Yours, mine, the one below you. Right? Our group, our population, we're going to be figuring that out. This next one coming up is one of my favorite sections to do this, because this is not something that a lot of people realize is going on in biotechnology. This is biotechnology in our food. Right? GMOs, genetically modified organisms, is a term that you will see on your food. Usually if it's an organic food, it'll say no GMOs. That means that nothing was genetically modified that went into that food.
At the same time, like the corn, wheat, now it's already been modified. Yes. They can say it's not, but it was.
Well,
a long time ago.
No.
Yeah?
No. It has to be non-genetically modified if it's marked that way.
Wow. Now.
All right? So, when is the last time you walked into your produce department in your grocery store and it said genetically modified tomatoes or genetically modified oranges? Anybody ever seen that?
No. It only says if it's not.
It only says if it's not. Okay. Out of our crops, proportion of crops that are not genetically modified. So the blue is what is genetically modified. Okay? Of our corn, about 45% of the corn in our agricultural crops that we eat today is genetically modified.
What do you mean genetically? Like they've done the...
Mm-hmm. They are...
To make it sweeter, to make it...
All of the above. Alright? Say, for example, the corn. Alright? It might be genetically modified to not freeze in colder temperatures or to be sweeter. Alright? We're going to look at a couple of examples here in just a minute.
Now, where does the aversion to this stuff come from? Because, I mean, this is for improvement.
Yes, we're going to talk about that. So hold on to that question. It's a really great question, because that's where we're headed. All right? Now, about 76% of the cotton that we eat, that we use is genetically modified. Soybeans, 85%. All right, so this is a massive amount of our food that we consume every day that is genetically modified. Okay? So, why do we do this? Let's talk about the goods. Alright, hold on just a minute. Alright, so, produce more nutritious food, alright? A sweeter food, one that ripens better, okay? An example of producing a more nutritious food is nutrient-rich golden rice, they call it. Alright, this is an example of one way that foods are being changed for the better. Okay, so here you have a daffodil and bacteria and your rice. Okay, so the deal here is humans make vitamin A from beta carotene. We have to have beta carotene in order to make vitamin A. What do we use vitamin A for? What's it good for?
Skin,
eyes especially, okay? So, increase your beta carotene consumption and you increase your vitamin A production, okay? Worldwide, there is a huge section of the world's population. About 10% of the world's people suffer from vitamin A deficiencies, right? This leads to about 250,000 cases of blindness each year, just because you're not getting enough vitamin A, right? If you can add beta carotene to a basic staple in these communities, then you can help alleviate this problem. So what they've done here is they've taken daffodils or bacteria that produce beta carotene, right? And they've taken the gene, for example, from this daffodil for making beta carotene, and they've inserted it into the white rice genome, right? So white rice is a big staple in a lot of countries around the world, and they've now taken a rice and made it full of beta carotenes. Okay? So now, you eat this golden rice, you have more beta carotene, it helps alleviate this problem. Okay? So you're making a more nutritious food through biotechnology. Okay? Another one. Make the plant insect resistant. Okay. So, you can modify a plant so that you don't have to use as many pesticides. For example, BT. Okay. Got a corn plant that is normally destroyed by insect pests.
crystal that some bacteria produce. Now you can buy BT crystal, spray it on your plants, and it will keep insects from eating your plant. However, if you spray it on the plant, you're also adding it into the soil. It can be washed away into the local rivers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All right? So the idea here is instead of spraying it on your crops, you make the plant produce its own BT crystal. So you take the gene from the bacteria for making BT crystal, you insert it into the genome of the plant cell, and these plants will now have the information for making BT crystal. They make it inside of their body of the plant. Okay. So the insect goes to eat the corn plant, it eats the BT crystal, and it dies. Okay? Now, this plant didn't used to create BT crystal. You've now made it produce this thing that kills insects. What is this producing? What's the point of growing this plant?
Possibly before then, but it has become very widespread through the 90s and the early, I mean, it's very widespread now.
Did it start the, like, universities?
Yes.
They come up with this stuff at Auburn?
Yeah,
or
and there's a lot of companies that do this as well,
right.
Genome companies. It's a very profitable business. Yeah.
I was just going to say that I think the base of the work for biotechnology and plants and stuff was started by Gregory Mendel. Wasn't it around the 50s when we started experimenting?
That was breeding and inheritance. So that was completely different from genetically modified, and that was in the 1850s. But that is different from genetically modifying. Yes, he's first started learning about how genes are inherited and first started learning about genes. But genetically modifying is different from breeding, okay? And we're going to be talking more about that. That came up in the last class period. So keep that in mind, that this is different from taking a male and a female plant or a male and a female organism and mixing them together and making offspring. You're actually manually changing the genome in a lab, okay? So this is very different.
Do they still modify plants or are they stopped?
Oh, no. Very much so. Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Now, some people do it, some people don't.
If you have a label, like if you go to the organic section, right? Depending on how it's marked, many organic things are not genetically modified, okay? No GMOs, right? Now, only within about the past decade has even organic gotten regulations. For a long time, if you just, you know, didn't put fertilizer on your plants, you could say organic. It could be genetically modified to the hilts, you could use pesticide to the hilts, but if you didn't put fertilizer, you could call it organic, right? Now there's a group of stipulations that you have to meet in order to put organic on your label. That
it's
didn't
so
used
hard,
to be so.
It's like so expensive now when something says organic and then stuff
right.
costs a lot more than
right. Okay, another example here is herbicide resistance. Okay, again, taking genes from bacteria or from other plants. Some plants create their own resistance to herbicides and are naturally resistant to herbicides. And you can take that gene, put it into an organism that would be killed by an herbicide, and now you have a crop that with an herbicide. What's the problem with this scenario? Well, let's start with the good. What's the good? Why would that be good? You've now created a crop that will not be killed by herbicide. Why is that good?
You don't have to spray herbicide.
No, you don't have to spray herbicide. Okay. Bad? Any bads?
It'll probably soon affect the other weeds and stuff around it. They might develop the same resistance.
Possibly, if you get crossbreeding.
The insects develop resistance.
Sometimes. Okay. Plants are really good at crossbreeding with other plants. So one that has this herbicide resistance can cross with a weed, and you now have a super weed that can't be killed by herbicide. Or let's say that this is an herbicide-resistant plant and its seeds spread through the wind to the neighboring farm. Well, they don't want that growing in their field. They try and kill it. They can't kill it with herbicide. Okay. So this spreading into the ecosystem is a worry on this front. Okay. Now we get into the animals. This is biotechnology in agricultural animals. Alright, what you're looking at here is the transgenics. Alright, remember transgenic is when you've got genes from two different organisms. The transgenic salmon. Most salmon grow only in a particular portion of the year. So it takes a good while for a salmon to get to the weight and length that it can be harvested for food. These transgenic salmon carry a version of growth hormone gene that functions year-round. It was isolated from a cold water fish species, injected into the egg of a salmon, and this super fish can be raised much more quickly, reaching market size in 18 months instead of 24 to 30 months.
That's good for us and the
fish. Okay. Let's talk about that.
You want your daughter eating growth hormone? I'll say same thing.
But that's what's happening anyhow.
Yes.
I mean, we are eating what they're producing, so there's no way you can give them.
There is a way.
Okay.
The industry makes what we ask for. Okay? You ask with your dollars. Okay. If you say, I will not eat genetically modified chickens, but organic chickens, they're available, right? That's one of my favorite examples. This is pretty dramatic because you can see the size here. A chicken, normally, a normal chicken, takes about 6 months to go from egg to adult. They now have genetically modified chickens that are egg to adult in 6 weeks. Now think about that. How much growth hormone is in that chicken? Okay. Now when you eat chicken, think about how much chicken you eat a week. Okay. Now that chicken comes to harvest, so to speak, in 6 weeks. So why is this good?
They can sell more product.
Sell more product. We get more product.
there's a better food or greater food supply, I'll say. We're debating whether it's better. And that's what this conversation is all about. All right, so what are the concerns possibly with this? One was mentioned.
If you eat the growth hormone, so then the growth hormone is you, correct?
Exactly.
Okay. Have they proven that it necessarily makes you grow faster?
They found connections.
They've taken someone who's eaten this for years, and they've said, okay, this is why you've grown this bigger, this faster, blah, blah, blah.
Okay, here's where they are on this. It is actually, that's true, it's still actually in hypothesis phase, all right? However, there is more and more scientific evidence. It hasn't gotten to the theory point yet because they haven't replicated it enough that it's widely accepted. But they've had a lot of examples that definitely are showing one leads to the other. One of the things that started to build this hypothesis was that in our society, puberty is hitting earlier and earlier. It's supposed to hit, or in past decades, what's a common age for puberty to hit? 12, 13-ish, sometimes 11, all right? Now girls are hitting puberty 9,
yeah.
10, and this has happened just within the last couple of decades. And this is becoming, that used to be a rare thing that would happen, that's becoming a very common thing now. And they think that it is because we are ingesting so much growth hormone from the foods that we eat, right? Some of the evidence that shows this, they're looking at rivers. They're seeing this not just in humans, but in a lot of different organisms. Rivers that contain more effluent, that contain growth hormones, like effluent from cattle ranches, etc., right? And from sewage systems, and they contain more hormones, have some of the same issues that are showing up. Okay? So there's more and more evidence that's building toward this, but it's still a very controversial, and we do not know for sure yet. What? Most definitely. And they have genetically modified cows that produce more growth hormone. They also inject growth hormone into cows to get a bigger cow quicker and to produce more milk. So you drink milk, it has bovine growth hormone in it. You eat the beef, it has bovine growth hormone in it. You eat chicken, it has growth hormone in it. You're going to leave this class just all happy today, aren't you? You're never going to eat again. Yeah.
Could they also point it at the obesity in the younger children?
Yes. And that is one of the things that they're looking at as well. And they think it's a combination of a lot of things. Because the obesity in younger and younger children is leading to a lot of things happening faster. Yes. So that is one of the, we think it's a combination. At this point, they're thinking it's not just one thing, that it's a conglomeration of things that are changing in our populations. But yes, that's another one of the leading things.
Is it causing not only growth in the body, but in the mind too?
That one is more debated. But once you hit puberty, of course, all the hormones are kicking in, so that starts changing the mind as well. So, yes. Yes. Okay. This is one of the more bizarre examples. A featherless chicken. Why would this be good?
You don't have to pluck them.
Why is this not necessarily good? Why do chickens have feathers?
To
protect them, right? So some farmer said, hey, let's take a step here, right? This poor chicken. I'm so sorry for
your dog. Okay. If we're eating chickens, why do we care about it? It doesn't have protection. It doesn't care.
No, okay. Wait. All right. Would you rather eat a chicken that is healthy
concerns, okay? So there's six main things that your book goes into of some of the major fears that are going on with this. Like I said, we've hit a lot of these already. Organisms that we want to kill may become invincible. For example, the plant that we make herbicide resistant may crossbreed with a weed and you end up with a super weed that can't kill the herbicide. Okay. Organisms that we don't want to kill may be killed inadvertently. Okay. For example, are all insects bad?
No.
What are some that we really want around?
Spiders.
Hornets. Stuff like
that. Spiders. What else?
Bees.
Bees. What are some that we just think are
pretty?
Love bugs. Love bugs. Butterflies. Right? Ladybugs. Not all insects do we really want to eradicate. But if you make a plant that used to be a food source for, let's say, a butterfly or a bee, right? It didn't used to have BT crystal in it, but now it does. That insect's not going to know that. It's going to go to that plant, eat that as a food source, and what's going to happen to it? Right? Kicks the bucket. So you can end up killing stuff you don't want to kill. Yeah?
You know how you said, like, the water is like the, that is getting some of the growth hormones, like the blood running off into it.
Right.
I was watching the Discovery Channel the other day, and in Australia, they're talking about their rats are just getting really big. Mm-hmm. Oh. Could that be, like, possibly why?
Here's a lot of different things that can cause something like that. I don't know the particular background to that particular one. I think there's several things that are causing that particular thing. I don't think that that's growth hormone related, but I, like I said, I don't know the ins and outs of that.
I think roaches, like in the sewers, like roaches, water bugs are starting, well, roaches are starting to get bigger too.
Now, roaches and insects getting bigger has to do with pesticides, which we're going to be talking, hold on to that question, because we're going to be talking about that in the natural selection chapter, because you're killing off the weakest ones, the pesticides, so which ones are going to live the strongest? Okay, quickly.
Don't they test everything before they can package it and send it out? Chicken, beef, crops.
I don't think.
Who tests it? Who's they?
I'm eating it. I'm still alive, so I'm not really too worried about it.
Okay.
How do I use it? Go ahead and say it. Don't say it. I'm talking about the fatherless chicken.
All right, I'll answer this a couple of different ways, without putting too much of my bias in it. Okay. Number one, I try not to do that too much. Okay. The government's doing it.
They should perish you.
All right. Now, whatever regulations are in place is what they're being tested by. Okay. So, kind of like organic that we mentioned earlier, there were previously stipulations for organic. There are now. Right. If you don't have stipulations, if you don't have regulations, the company is going to test it to the regulation standards. Okay, so yeah, they're being tested. Okay, but are they being tested to a standard that you want?
Oh, yeah. I get what you're saying.
Okay, now, and you also mentioned you're alive with now. What about in 30 years? Are you going to see long-term effects? We don't know.
I meant more towards the featherless chicken, and if he got bit by a mosquito that had West Nile, they test it.
For yes.
That's what I
meant. That sort of stuff they test for. Yes. Okay. Yes. Okay. So genetically modified crops are not tested or regulated adequately. I think we just answered that one. Okay. Fourth one, eating genetically modified foods is dangerous. This is one of the most controversial ones. Okay. We've got everything from the golden rice. That one's a good one, but we've artificially changed it. Will we see long-term effects? We don't know. Okay? What about eating the corn that has the BT crystal? It's great on a lot of different levels, but will we see long... We are essentially being the guinea pigs, and that's one of the concerns. We may see no effects whatsoever, and all the good is going to be the good, and it's going to be fabulous 50 years from now. But there's always that possibility that we're going to see long-term effects. That's one of the fears. We don't know.
I thought rats are supposed to be guinea pigs and stuff like that. They test that stuff on rats, don't they?
To a point,
they
yes.
They came along and no more animal testing.
No, they still do a lot of animal testing. And, for example, one of the things that any genetically modified food has to go through as testing is they test it with digestive enzymes. There are certain tests that they have to do to make sure that we are not going to have allergies or be digested differently. This stuff is tested, but do we know what to test yet? That's one of the concerns. All right. Loss of genetic diversity among crop plants. This is one of the big fears by biologists. We'll be talking a little bit more about why diversity is so important in the inheritance chapter and in the natural selection evolution chapter. But that's really important for a population to have diversity. If you have an entire crop that's the same exact thing, that can lead to greater incidence of disease. And hidden costs. Okay. One of the things that they've done to reduce some of the other fears is they've made a lot of genetically modified plants, for example, so that they can't reproduce seeds. Okay? So that way, every year, you have to buy a new seed crop. A lot of farmers use seeds from the year before to start their next crop. If you're using genetically modified foods, you can't do that.
Yeah, go buy a tomato in the store right now and try to grow next year from that seed.
And yeah, they
won't. It'll grow a plant, but it won't.
Yeah.
There's the biggest fear of all that it's not worth it.
Right. So, and this is just some of the big top ones. There are other things associated with this, but there are some legitimate fears in here. There's some that are kind of overpronounced, I think, but time will tell. And it's a matter of what kind of regulations you want to put on this.
We have a greater lifespan now than any time in history, so I think we're doing something right.
We're doing something right. However, as Cynthia mentioned, our younger generation, they're suspecting may have a shorter lifespan than any generation in the past 100 years because of a lot of the problems that they're having. So like I said, time will tell. But you're right, we're doing something right, but we also have a new generation that's coming in eating and being exposed to a lot of this. So we'll see. It may be fabulous. We may see more problems that we couldn't even think of. Okay, so today...